Ladies and gentlemen, this podcast, Film Jerks, is truly one of the most spoiler-filled film podcasts ever recorded. It contains ridiculous opinions, which under no circumstances should be listened to by anyone that has a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset by film spoilers. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person, or parent of a young and impressionable child now listening, that you skip to the end of the podcast for our ratings and live your lives free of disagreeing with overtly opinionated people. You'll live longer.
Film Jerks is a group where we, as a community, pick a film to watch, then discuss like little old ladies in a book club. Only our films have decapitations and nude slumber party pillow fights. If you wish to become part of the conversation and become a film jerk, go to the Facebook group and join. Film Jerks can be found on iTunes and Stitcher Smart Radio.
Welcome to Film Jerks, the podcast where we talk about movies like little old ladies in a film club. Only our films have military intrigue and a patient zero who's really a capuchin monkey.
Too many movies have taught me absolutely never trust a monkey.
Or Dustin Hoffman.
I forgot that this wasn't Dick Tracy for like the first 30 minutes he was in there because he was playing the same character.
I don't want to. I
got a virus. You got to stop.
Imagine if he was Raymond from Rain Man.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah, he played Rain. That was his name. I keep getting him and Of Mice and Men crossed. I kept thinking it was Lenny.
Oh, not
his
no.
name.
Oh,
yeah. Raymond. That was his name.
Lenny. I'm going to kill the rabbits with a virus, George.
Can I pet the rabbit?
Tell me about the farm you destroyed so you could contain your manufactured Ebola.
I like to pet the monkey, George.
I bet you do, Lenny. I bet you do.
All right. So the movie that we're going to be talking about is 1995's Outbreak. It's directed by Wolfgang Peterson, and it's based on a nonfiction book called The Hot Zone, which was written by Richard Preston. And it does star Dustin Hoffman, Renee Russo, Morgan Freeman, Donald Sutherland, Cuba Gooding Jr., Kevin Spacey, and Patrick Dempsey. Oh my God, there's just a lot of stars in this film.
Star-studded.
I'm for real.
Absolutely.
And it's about this fictitious Matoba. Is it Matoba or Matamba? Matoba, right?
Matoba.
Motaba.
Motaba. That's
all right. So it's about this fictitious Motaba virus, which is named after the river valley where the virus originates. Before we actually start talking about the film, I want to know what are your favorite outbreak and pandemic stories? It doesn't have to be a movie. It can be a book or anything like that. See how rusty I am? I forgot to introduce the panel.
It'll be all right.
They know us by now.
Yeah, we'll just do like a in media res kind of thing. We'll Tarantino it.
Oh, okay.
We were talking about the virus, and now all of a sudden we jump back where we're just sitting around in a diner and we tell some lurid story or something like that and get the introduction.
There you go. I like that. Actually, why don't we just do that right now? We're sitting. We're actually gathered around this table. I've got myself, who is the bowtie jerk. Next to me is, of course, Daniel, the Nightkeep jerk. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing really well. I'm kind of lonely, but I'm actually used to this, so I'm pretty happy.
I was fixing to say, I haven't had to change a damn thing.
And then, of course, next to him is our lovely lipstick jerk, Angelique. How are you today?
I'm great. I'm pretty much like Daniel said, I haven't had to change much about my everyday life since I live in basically quarantine.
The worst part is the gyms are closed. That's the main thing that grieves
yes.
me.
Yes. Mine got permission to open
really?
On Monday. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
No shit.
Dude. No shit. Viking Fitness, baby. We're going to Valhalla.
Yeah, man. You probably have to sanitize machines after use all the time anyway.
Well, yeah, they're like, they made up this big thing of rules. Like, as soon as you walk in, you have to wash your hands. And then, you know, of course, you know, sanitize the equipment before and after and all
wash
that.
Wash your feet. Shave your shoulders.
Make shoulders? Sure you put on the bronzer.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's kind of exciting because I've been using the track.
I've been having to run every day. I don't have a cool 80s montage music, and I'm not Sylvester Stallone, and I'm like not a vigilante maverick cop out for revenge, so I have no montage music to make things awesome. I'm not an Akumite, so I can't stare in the bathroom mirror and reflect on the events that have led me to this point so I can do
don't
a nice
dream
workout.
It, be it.
Well, but I don't have that. So I'm just having to run around with my dog who's on the spectrum because I think he's got Asperger's. So I'm just running around the neighborhood with him. And it's just, yeah. I just want to go back to the gym. Nothing wrong with people with Asperger's. Yeah. But when you have them attached to a leash, trying to run in the neighborhood with them, it gets difficult. I'm sorry.
Well, I just get strange looks because I, you know, I've got my music in or whatever, and I'm bopping along the track and stop at the bench that's covered with all the names of the 1965 Trutland County track stars doing my squats and my crunches and stuff. And everybody's like, what are you doing? I'm like, what does it freaking look like I'm doing? Leave me alone.
Oh, I look like the guy from, what was it, Hardware? Like the wasteland guy, I look like him when I'm running around. I'll wave to everybody, and they're thinking, "Oh my god, he's gonna kill me!"
Yeah, I'm super friendly with this bandana tied around my face.
Exactly. But the thing I miss most is not being able to game every weekend with my my gaming buddies. I've been trying to hook up with Discord and try to get us to start gaming on there, but not everybody can do that. And so we're kind of like in this limbo. So
I slept in until 7 this morning.
Oh man, look at you!
I know. I was like, oh, who's living this carefree Parisian lifestyle here?
That is that complete with armpit hair too?
Well, I mean, I'm single and we're quarantined.
Lady never divulges her secrets.
Razors are not essential right now.
Let's just put it this way. I imagine a few of our chicks' friends could probably audition for the part of Pan in any mythological play and would be a shoo-in for the part. Know what I mean?
No. No, I'm Nair from the chin down, you know.
Oh my goodness.
I can wear short shorts, baby.
You could really tell the more OCD inclined of us because, yeah, with nothing else to do, you walk around and you start plucking eyeballs with a pair of tweezers and start trimming hairs where you never really thought to trim.
Yeah, like, oh, wow, okay, I can reach that spot. Let's,
the gooch, okay? My gooch has never been smoother. You start with one thing, and then you just start, oh, what do you know? Next thing you know, I'm two elbows deep. And, things are smooth and clean.
Like a baby seal.
All right. Before we actually start discussing the film, I want to know what your favorite outbreak or pandemic story is. Again, it doesn't have to be a film, per se. Let's start out with Daniel.
Honestly, I was trying to think, like, when you talk about a virus or some kind of, you know, pandemic style film, the first thing I'm thinking of is Dawn of the Dead, but that doesn't count because that was the beauty of that is that you never know what actually causes it. So I have to, you know, taking that out of the equation, I'll go ahead and extricate the zombie thing from it. Being that, you know, so Dawn of the Dead doesn't count. I really can't think now that I'm on the spot. I can't really think of one, honestly.
my favorite pandemic film would be Wreck. That one, I think that would fit the mold, but if that's a little too out there or whatever, probably, I mean, I'm just trying to think. I like Wreck. I liked, now, the, was it season two? No, season three of The Walking Dead, when they got the pandemic, you know, when they were camped out in the prison. That was actually pretty cool. But there's no real movie as far as like a virus that I can think of other than Wreck. And that kind of counts, but not really. Go to Angelique. I'm sure she's got a better one.
All right, Angelique, you're up.
28 Days Later.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's a great one. Wreck or and Quarantine. I mean, for a remake, it was pretty solid. The Stand, of course.
Damn, forgot all about that.
And not so much a virus, but like parasitic kind of deal with the Puppet Masters.
Oh, yeah.
Which also had Donald Sutherland.
Yeah.
Nice. Now, there was an episode of Forever Night that had the pandemic, too. That one was a that was one of the better episodes, season three.
Yeah.
We'll get to that one eventually, Angelique, but that's when I'm trying to think of pandemics, that's about the only one.
If you think about it, vampirism is a disease, so you know, technically Dracula.
Ah.
You know, lycanthropy, you know.
Oh, World War Z. That was a disease.
Yeah. Overlord.
Oh.
Dude, yeah. Yeah,
we're getting all sorts of nice ones.
Okay, yeah. Now, you know, thinking a little, you get a little bit more thought to it. Yeah, there are a few of them. It's like when I think Outbreak, it's just Dawn of the Dead immediately. Mm-hmm. And I just watched Wreck a couple weeks ago. It's weird. I didn't even think of it.
R-E-C.
Like for record.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The conceit of Wreck was that it was found footage, but that is one of the best found footage flicks and scariest and intense. And Quarantine, while I hated everything about it, it was mainly just because they took, it's like making, is I did this in my bottom rack episode. There are certain things that make Doom, the game. And when you take, there's like a certain element that makes that game unique in that game. And when you take that one element out and you make a movie and you have removed the demonism, the demonic elements of that, you have taken away the satanic element of the game, you have watered down and completely ruined the movie. And to me, that's the same with Wreck and then making Quarantine. When they remove just that 30-second little audio clip at the end of the film, they have completely removed what to me made that movie so intense. However, as a shot-for-shot remake, I thought it was brilliant. I mean, it was like Gus Van Sant's Psycho. It was just, you know, it was a shot-for-shot remake of
Wreck. I hate that movie so much. I hate that movie.
It was so, like, what was it? Quarantine. Because I went to the theater and saw it. I mean, then, you know, when you compare the two, it was really cool. But it wasn't Wreck. But it was still, as far as a outbreak or like a pandemic film, it was Quarantine was actually better than Wreck in a sense. And all of these were so much more action packed than the film that we're about to have to talk about.
We love to pick them, don't we?
Yeah, we sure do, don't we, Paul?
Yes. Actually, this one was based on a recommendation from one of our viewers. So they had suggested we should do something about an outbreak thing. And me being
somebody
lazy.
Somebody else listens to this?
Oh, of course they do.
Jesus.
One of five, I think.
four of those are me.
mine is, they've made two movies out of it, but I don't really like the movies. I like the original book because it was the first book that I read front to back and then right again front to back. That was the first story I ever had to read twice because I loved it so much. And that's Michael Crichton's Andromeda Strain.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wow. I completely forgot all about that. Yeah, dude.
And I thought that this movie, Outbreak, had very similar themes running through it. You know, you got the race against time to figure out how the virus really works so that they can shut it down. And then you also had these like series of human errors and bureaucracy kind of leading to how to make the outbreak worse and worse and worse. And, you know, I just thought that Outbreak had very similar things to Andromeda Strain, even though I think Andromeda Strain is far more superior story-wise.
Well, yeah.
So,
I mean, that's what happens going up against Michael Crichton, though, anyway. I mean, that dude could make, like, looking at studying ladybugs into an action-packed, suspenseful thriller. He was that gifted with writing.
The dots, they've changed.
My God!
So let's actually start talking about the movie. The movie does start in Zaire in 1967. And we see soldiers, they have this deadly illness. And then there are two army officers, McClintock and Ford. They're played by Kiefer Sutherland? Donald Sutherland. I'm going to constantly screw this up.
Oh, it's fine.
Played by Donald Sutherland and Morgan Freeman. And they're sent to investigate the illness, and they take samples before ending up destroying the village. We find out later that they take the virus to manufacture as a biological weapon. Even today with the COVID-19, there are conspiracies out there saying that it's manufactured or at least a cultivated virus. There's always a group of people willing to turn the virus into some kind of weapon.
It all goes back to, like, you know, the Kennedy conspiracy. The whole Cuban Missile Crisis, Cold War, you know, it was all about, you know, who has the biggest wiener.
So, I mean, hell, I could answer that. I'm sorry, go ahead. Couldn't resist. Y'all go ahead. That was just my redneck male moment for a minute. So please continue.
If Daniel was in this movie, it wouldn't have been a movie because they would have already just like,
whip it out and get it over with. Okay?
Walk over here and slap everybody in the forehead with it.
It would have been a better movie.
But, all 2 inches just... of it.
Well, I mean, it never drags in the middle, so.
You're right.
But no, it's just, you know, okay, yeah, the atomic bomb. We proved how, you know, really badass we were, and then we were like, oh shit, we didn't realize it was going to murder everybody. Wait a minute. Huh. All right, well, now they're going to be afraid of us forever, so let's keep making bigger and scarier. And what's scarier than something that you can't even see?
In a way, it almost becomes Lovecraftian.
Yeah.
If you were to take, because it's the same with that show Chernobyl, but if you were to look at this and examine, follow with how they, especially Chernobyl, but follow this and how they're reacting to an enemy that they can't see. They don't know it's there. They don't know where it came from. They don't know how it came to be there. Essentially, it's a Lovecraftian movie. You could just replace virus with elder being or, you
or
know,
demon
some,
or
something
ghost
beyond or... description.
Yeah. You
know. I like the fact that they didn't give us the full explanation of what caused it. It's very much like, oh, this happened in nature and we stumbled upon it like penicillin, you know, and we decided, hey, we can make this into something. It was interesting though that they actually did make antivirus from it, which I thought, yeah, that makes sense. If you're going to create a weapon, you might as well have the cure for it too.
Right. Well, they actually did explain where it came from. I mean, right there in the first 5 minutes of the movie, you know, who's that guy? He's not sick. Well, that's the Juju man. He's the witch doctor. And he says, because y'all came in to where no man should go and destroyed the trees, look what you did.
Well, yes, I suppose that's nature's way of punishing.
Some of that was getting just so ludicrous and stupid at that. I mean, just every now and then, some of that stuff, maybe ludicrous and stupid is a harsh term, but yeah, some of that was getting a little hokey when you got the guy, like you said, you know, maybe that's just, you know,
nature's fighting back. It's okay, come and get me then. You know, what the hell? And then later on, you know, you got the antivirus for this government conspiracy. I get why they were doing that. I really do. But you really got to be careful with some of that stuff. It does get kind of a little hokey with that narrative plot. You know, all of a sudden the subplot emerges with Morgan Freeman and Donald Sutherland talking about what they were doing at the very beginning of the movie. This movie felt like it was an entire season of establishing shots, like 24 episodes of just standing around watching people, standing around watching other people. And then they harken back to this narrative from the beginning of the movie. So I ended up catching that, but yeah, it was a little...
So years later, like 2-3 decades later, you get another Army specialist, this time led by Dustin Hoffman's character. His name is Colonel Sam Daniels, and they are sent to investigate a new outbreak. And of course, through his investigation, he's worried that this unknown virus will spread. So he goes back to his boss and says, hey, we got to put out a warning. And we find out that Billy Ford, one of the two Army officers from the earlier on in the 60s, is now his boss. And so he says, no, you don't have to worry about it. We've got it all taken care of. It has such a very quick time that it'll probably die out. Of course, Daniels disobeys his boss, and he calls his ex-wife, Roberta, who works at the CDC, and he has her try to issue a public warning about the virus. And they also establish that Dustin Hoffman's character has this pattern of disobeying, which you see him do throughout the entire movie.
At the time when the movie came out, I mean, I guess it was okay. We'll just kind of let it slide. I mean, that shit would not happen today. It just, a character like that is not, first of all, is not going to be in the military. And if he is, he's not going to last very long, because you just, when you have somebody going rogue and being a maverick like that, that just ain't going to fly. However, for the film's sake, with his character, I mean, it was cool. He needs to do that because Morgan Freeman's character, which your typical government worker, I can say that because I am one, is it'll work itself out. He comes in, General, we got 35% of the population dropping like flies and 75% in 2 hours. So like, well, it'll work itself out, won't it, Corn? Let's go on and do the other. It just so with the whole work itself out attitude, you're going to have somebody that gets frustrated. Apparently, this dude really takes his viruses and cultures seriously, because it seems like he knows everything they used to know about viruses. So much so that he apparently can't have it work out with Rene Russo, which is a damn shame. If you're looking at 90s film heroines, it's a crying shame. And if Dustin Mumbles Hoffman can ruin it with her, I don't have much hope for him, honestly. But I mean, that whole maverick rogue button heads, you have to have that in the story anyway. Otherwise, we're, I hate to be breaking kayfabe like that, but you know, this narrative will not go anywhere unless you have a necessary character like that. But as far as for him, in the film doing that, I mean, he was fine. Reality, it would never fly, but sure, in the film, yeah, I'll go with it. I kind of like it. It's okay.
Do you think a character like that would be a protagonist in a modern day film?
Well, I mean, with this big trend for redemption, you know, I don't know. I don't know, you know, I can see it going either way, you know. The only virus you're going to find in South Dakota is something you catch at a church supper.
I'll tell you one thing this movie does is make you realize just how filthy and disease-ridden everybody is. Once you start thinking about, you know, how viruses will spread and stuff, then you start being cognizant of the way people around you are. And so you will start noticing every little crick and muscle, like, and then people breathe, they're like, hi, like that. Whereas normally you wouldn't pay it any attention, but now all of a sudden it's just, you hear everything and it's just all gross and nasty. I can't even watch porn anymore. It just, because all you hear is just now it's just disgust. It's like, oh my God.
that actually made me understand why we can't go to the movie theaters during this pandemic, is because, you know, you have that one guy kind of cough and then you see the particles flying through the air and then landing in the one lady's mouth. Oh, man.
Yep. I was raised by a germaphobe, so I'm kind of attuned to all that. But then again, it's like, I can't control what anybody else does, so I'm not going to freak out about it. But please don't sneeze in my face. Please don't cough in my mouth, you know? That's not my thing, thanks.
But while all of this is happening, we see an infected monkey from Zaire being captured, and it's sent overseas to an animal testing laboratory in the U.S. And then one of the employees of this testing lab steals the monkey and basically takes it out of the facility and tries to sell it to this kind of black market pet dealer, I guess is the best way to describe him.
Yeah.
That, of course, sets a whole series of events that leads to the to this entire town of Cedar Creek being infected. Like certain people get infected, and like I was telling you about the one guy coughing in the movie theater, that gets other people infected.
Well, let's talk about the guy that coughs, because he's a damn fool. You know, you're a lab technician. You know good and well you don't just blindly reach into a centrifuge.
While it's still spinning, and he breaks the thing, and of course that causes him to expose himself.
Yeah, and again, it would not have gotten that far, because if this hospital was worth a damn, they would have shut down the entire facility, because that blood went everywhere. I mean, it was on the ceiling, and that guy would have been put in observation. I mean,
I'm sorry, please, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, no, I was just going to say how just that was the most ludicrous part of the storyline to me.
Ludicrous, yes, but I would fondle Patrick Dempsey's monkey any chance I get, so I am immediately just done, okay? Sorry, I had to just blurt that out. No. That's a fine, that's a fine looking there, young man. He has aged gracefully as well, but that's a fine-looking young man. Anyway.
And you can definitely tell this was pre-9/11.
It was, man. So much of this was just watching it. Maybe that's one of the things. It's like, I mean, yeah, I'm hard on the movie because it was boring as shit for like 45. Nothing happened for 45 minutes. But there was, I don't know, just so much of it has, and maybe that just comes with, you know, as you get older, you realize this. I'm sure as a kid, I would have been bored to tears, but wouldn't have caught a lot of this, you know, things that just wouldn't fly nowadays. It would just, maybe that's it, is a lot of it just becomes kind of unbelievable as I'm watching, but like, there's no way that way. That doesn't happen. Come on. But, you know, he goes, the funny thing is stealing the monkey from a research lab to sell it on the black market was like the most believable thing to me.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I could read that on any trade paper between here and Florida. Like, I could just read that, the little gas station jail report, and I would totally buy it. Be like, yep, dumbass. Should have sold it down the corner at that other gas station. They don't narco on you down there. I mean, that was believable as far as like showing the guy coughing in the movie theater, and then he gets up and starts walking, and it does a POV of him, and all it is you're seeing every face that he comes, and as every person that you see blocked into the shot, you're like, wow, they got infected. You know, he just infected 24 people in this one 10-second scene of him getting up, walking out. Not to mention all the people in the theater, but just showing him walking to the snack bar. And every person that you saw, you're like, wow, he is infected every single, because he's coughing on them the entire time. And then he collapses, and it's like, well, they're screwed.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think because of movies like this that people are more cognizant of that type of behavior. It's like, well, now I'm coughing. I'm not gonna basically rush out and try to get some water. I mean, in the story, it seemed logical. You know, my throat is parched. I'm coughing. I'm going to get some water. But he looked like he was going to, like, he was the Walking Dead. Like, at that point, it'd be like, okay, I'm going to cover my mouth up and I'm going to like be tail, you know, head right down to the hospital, man.
This was one of those, this was bad writing as far as the movie, the plot progression, because everyone else in the film, it took a while for them to collapse over and for things to get that bad. This dude went from zero to red line in the span of him coughing a couple of times in the movie theater. Like, there was no lead up to showing him, because when the people were collapsing and convulsing or whatever, they wouldn't have gone to a movie. His girlfriend would have been like, dude, you need to stay home, man. You are ghastly.
Yeah, we can skip the movie, sweetheart. Let me get you some NyQuil.
That was just a little, as far, I mean, of course, again, they have to do that for the plot to further the narrative, you know, to show him exposing all them people in the theater. But still, that was like a little unbelievable, because nobody else went under in that short amount of a time. It took a little bit of a buildup.
Yeah, after that point, it goes from, it starts to spread. It goes airborne, like it becomes the flu instead of Ebola. Actually, I don't know that much about Ebola. Does Ebola transmit via coughing?
Yeah, this disease is pretty much based on Ebola, because it essentially liquefies you. But Ebola is spread via direct transmission, whereas the flu, you know, is airborne, basically.
Right. The flu you can catch breathing. Ebola is through excretion. And that's, you know, with a virus being a living organism, it's trying to get out and spread. And so the body's trying to get rid of the virus. And so that's why you just start bleeding and getting things out of you in horrible places and stuff. And that's Ebola. And the fact that it goes airborne, if Ebola ever went airborne, then it's over. So,
speaking of secretions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. You're in the airport and your sweetheart comes down and looks like that. Are you going to shove his tongue in your mouth? I don't think so.
You're darn right. How much did you miss me? No, I know it. For real, though. I mean, dude looked like he just looked in the Ark of the Covenant. And she going to run up and start kissing on him. It's just like, what? You know what? I call that natural selection. You have earned what you get. You see what I mean?
I was just like, oh, God, I love you and I missed you so much, but let's go to the urgent care.
Again, if I saw Patrick Dempsey, I might do the same thing.
Now, I should mention that the Hot Zone, which is what this story is based on,
that's
is
Patrick Dempsey's nickname, too. Sorry.
The Hot Zone, yes, it is actually a nonfiction book. So it actually does kind of have, like Angelique said, it's probably very much based on the Ebola virus itself. And that's what they basically did. Well, let's put this fictitious tale around the Ebola virus. And
there again, I understand like how tough it might be to write a story, you know, if you're trying, depending on, because I mean, I could write a story about a pandemic, anything, you know, that's easy. But I guess if you're trying to base it on a book, a nonfiction book, I can see where the difficulty might arise.
They didn't have the advantage of the things that we have. We have history. And we know that, you know, we have the Ebola virus. We've had E. coli, like, killing people, like, ridiculous amounts of, you know, and salmonella and all those things are starting to just, you know.
You raise an interesting point, because I have to tell my son this all the time. It's just fun to laugh at a film, because I'll laugh at anything, especially if it's goofy. But you make an interesting point. You can't judge the past through the lens of the present. We cannot sit there and look at society and the pressures and things of the past through the lens of, I mean, we can. People do it all the time, think they know every damn thing there is to know without realizing that they don't know shit. But to look at
looking at this movie when the movie came out, I'm sure that they were, you know, considered themselves learned in the field of pandemics and viruses and stuff. And of course, now we look back on it and be like, God, what the hell? But back then, that hadn't happened. Like, the only basis that we really had was the Spanish flu. And, I mean, I don't speak Spanish. So, I mean, that, nothing you can do about that. And that was in 1918. So we haven't really had to face that. It's just interesting that you bring that up. I just thought of that moment.
There was influenza, there was TB, there was polio.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
See?
Well, I remember
there's,
when
there's
they...
People, there's, sorry, there's people alive today that had polio.
I remember they said that that was caused by ice water, and then they found out later that it wasn't. You know, people just grasp at things because they didn't understand.
Well, I mean, it's like this whole 5G thing with COVID.
Oh, they're saying that it's caused by 5G?
Yep.
They were saying the 5G contributed to it because 5G reduces because of the microwaves in the air. It reduces the oxygen content. Therefore, it reduces, it messes with your chemical balance in your body and basically can contribute to you contracting it. That was what one of the things I had read. I mean, it's very, I don't want to say obtuse. I mean, it's just one of those, can't prove it, can't disprove it, but at the end of the day, it's just contributing to the noise floor.
Yeah, correlation is not causation.
I mean, I'll buy it, sure. Hell, why not? But still, that wasn't the point, neither here nor there, and it was, you know, a whole different unrelated story to it. But yeah, some people were, I'm sure somebody was thinking that it was. Okay.
take tinfoil, wrap it around your cell phone now. Jeez. So they, of course, take it to the next step where the military has to go in and quarantine the town of Cedar Creek to prevent the spread of the disease. But in some circles, it was probably to prevent the knowledge of the disease from getting out. And this, of course, causes fear in the people, and they panic. And they even had a bunch of people try to break the quarantine, which is the dumbest thing possible. And they get killed because the military has to stop them because you don't want the rest of the world getting infected. And you kind of see that now with COVID-19, in that you see people are getting together and having COVID-19 parties. And I'm like, what? I know that you're trying to prove that you're like all super cool and that you know viruses are not going to affect you until you get it. They're trying to work within the boundaries of the rules to try to make your life as convenient as possible. And have people fared well in your neck of the woods? I mean, like, we've seen outages of toilet paper and stuff like that, which is funny because we make toilet paper here. and so forth. But the most part, this is probably the mildest apocalypse that I could ever hope for. So it really hasn't affected me too much. How about you guys? Have people panicked because of restrictions?
Yeah. Around
here. What sort of things have they done?
Oh, well, I mean, like, you know, this is, I'm in like rural Georgia, so we fear anything that is unfamiliar. But all these rules, you know, everybody's like, a militia group has started advertising.
Nice.
Yeah, no, the Sons of the Confederacy have put up a big ad on I-16. Yeah. Yeah, it's a giant billboard, you know, join us now, if not now, never. And got the Confederate flags and everything, and I'm like, huh.
Whoa.
Get your MREs, boys, you know. So hopefully that'll just, you know, puzzle itself out. You've got people just being, y'all ain't gonna tell me I can't do nothing. You know, I was at the track the other day and like 20 people came to the track and like went down in the grass part in the middle and was basically having a cookout, you know, playing kickball and all kinds of stuff. And I'm like, don't do that. And of course, you know, we've got our local Piggly Wiggly that is price gouging like crazy. And
God, y'all have a Piggly Wiggly.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where I'm at. And there's not any paper product to be had in a 25-mile radius. So it's like it's this weird mix of we're going to be terrified, but we're not going to follow any instructions to prevent a catastrophe. And that's seeing itself play out. Because I work in Dublin, which is the biggest city within 30 miles. And I'm essential, so I have to go to work because I work in the healthcare field.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got people coming in off the street, employees coming in, coughing, hacking, touching everything up, not paying any attention. And our cases of positive COVID keep climbing and climbing and climbing and climbing. So I'm like, okay.
Wow.
How to stop this. Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy.
How about you, Daniel?
I don't know. I mean,
I talk it through with my son, and the libertarian in me is constantly, you know, just rationalizing stuff, trying to, you know, put pieces together myself. With everything going on around here, sadly, there really is no right or wrong answer. And you were saying panic. We don't have that. I mean, we had panic buying. Yes, there was no toilet paper for like several weeks or whatever. It was absurd. It was stupid. You still go to the grocery store and like a lot of the meat is gone. And that's due to the panic buying from Karen running out of her little gated sub community and buying all the meat and the toilet paper with her "can I speak to the manager" haircut. And just a little addendum, just a little side note, you know, everybody talking, well, we're just ready for the apocalypse and stuff like that, you know, don't have anything for anybody else. Well, everybody, I'll just go ahead and say it. I mean, no offense to it, but Angela, you'll know what I mean. All the Yankees come from there and move down here. And then they move into little gated communities and stuff. And they have all the nice little money and everything that they made up north. And they come down here and they bring their gun-free zones with them and stuff too. Well, thanks for letting us know that when society collapses, thanks for telling me where everything is that I need to get. And for letting me know where the gun-free zone is at the same time.
Yep, because I'm going to come get
it. I was fixing to say, I'll let you know my stance on the Second Amendment. Let me find you on my property whenever I haven't asked you to be here. So that's the end of that. Now, as far as the panic, and I know it probably sounds really funny with my voice, too. I'll tell you what side Second Amendment I'm on. But as far as the panic around here, I mean, everything's, of course, you're going to have that everywhere. My God, I have a hypochondriac coworker. Bless her heart, she is mercilessly and ruthlessly efficient. Like, if Stalin had her, she would be like number two. This woman is just, she is that ruthlessly efficient. I love her to death, but she is a hypochondriac and hasn't been to work in like 3 weeks. Been working from home, emailing like every 5 minutes. I know exactly what's going on. So does she, but hadn't even shown up to work. It's, I almost feel bad for her. Me talking it over with my son, it is what it is. I wash my hands. I try to wipe sufficiently, shake it a couple extra times, you know, whenever I go to the restroom, shower, bathe frequently, and try to instill this into my son because he is the son. He is a boy, so he is filthy. We tend to be that way until, well, I don't know, because I still am, so we try to bathe regularly, but what else are you going to do? There's nothing you can do. And as far as society shutting down, what the hell? If you have things going, why, you know, shutting things down. Now, sure, maybe don't go and have a cookout, but I am also of the same mind. If they want to do that, fuck them.
Right.
I mean, sure. Okay. Maybe that sounds a little hard, but look, it is what it is. If I want to do it, let me go do it. I know the risk involved, so I'm going to go do it anyway. Now, as far as people's liberty, your liberty ends where mine begins. You see what I mean? Now, sometimes our freedom, pursuit of happiness and stuff run parallel. But whenever they begin to cross, well, that's whenever we have to decide how best to coexist. You see what I mean? And as long as I'm not infringing your life and you're not infringing mine, then we get along. So some of these things, that's why I'm trying to just tell my son, the way I see it, there is no right or wrong. Now, to tie it back into this film, which was startlingly prescient, because we're about 45 minutes in, where thank God something's finally happening in this movie. And you see them cordoning off the town, and it's just weird when you see the military trucks rolling in. And now, of course, this is small town. It was California in the film, wasn't it?
Yeah, Cedar Creek, yeah. California.
Okay, so it still may as well have been a foreign country. But you know, it was a smaller town, so it wasn't like the big city. But, you know, we saw those pictures in the – at least I saw, like, headline on the newspaper, Walk Up Hour, whatever, about, you know, army vehicles or whatever trolling through the streets in New York. So that was pretty prescient. And then you see the military getting out and cordoning people off and saying, you know, they've instituted a curfew and you have people trying to get out of town. And I mean, thank God they didn't try to do the whole stereotype and make them redneck hicks. But again, you have a group of like three guys in the truck who were basically, they were the, you know, using my quirky fingers, militia people. And then you had the family also trying to escape. And which is why I'm just trying to look at it through that lens of not really taking sides. Because if you step back and look at it, neither one was wrong. I mean, the military was there. I get the feeling that they wouldn't, I don't know. I mean, it was a movie. There was no real way to gauge that situation, but it was almost like the military wasn't going to shoot them. The military didn't gun that truck down until the truck fired at them.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like the Boston Massacre. They were at a standstill. Because even the officers in the helicopter, they're like, I'm not going to shoot these people. Don't make me shoot them. And he lit up the ground in front of the truck, but he didn't shoot the truck. It wasn't until they shot at them. It was like, he just shooted me? Oh, hell no. And then, you know, they lit him up. And then, of course, they surround the family. And they, you know, take the family back in. But if you wanted Daniel's opinion, there really was no bad guy in that situation. That's just one of those. It just played out the way it played out. It didn't, it certainly didn't help the situation at all. So we might want to be mindful of that.
There's so much manufactured panic.
Yes.
You see military trucks driving in. You see barbed wire getting strung across this town line and everything, that's going to make people flip out. Just like now, all these news stories, yep. These pictures of the mass graves and everything, that's going to make people flip out. The best way, do it quietly. Just be like door to door or a phone call. Be like, hey, you know, people are getting really sick and we don't want it to get worse. So you need to stay home.
Nowadays we're like every like 5 to 10 minutes that counter keeps being readjusted with the counts of the number of people that have recovered, of confirmed cases, and how many died.
That's why you don't pay attention.
Yeah.
I hate it, man, but seriously, you know, whatever you want to call me, loon, I don't give a shit. Just stop paying attention to it. The media is not there to give you the news anymore. It is there to direct an emotion and a narrative. And that's it. They exist for clicks. They exist for, and there's two things. Marilyn Manson said it after Columbine. The media is there to do two things, to give you fear and consumption. They get you afraid so you go buy shit. That's it. Fear and consumption. So
that and the fact that they make their money off viewership, clicks, and subscribers and stuff, they are no longer there to inform. They are there to direct and to get subscriber dollars. So stop paying attention to it. Seriously, you will feel so much better. Trust mm-hmm. Facebook is the same. Now, I know it kind of sucks that, you know, some of us exist like our outlets and stuff, you know, like the podcast is on Facebook. And I mean, I'm a musician. But as far as like my timeline, it was a little societal experiment I started doing about 3 months ago, is that the first political post that would come up or somebody just being generally negative, mute, delete, mute, delete. I would mute them first for 30 days and then be like, let's see how my timeline feels with their absence. And if they pop back up, they're like, oh, they're back. Hey, that was nice. And sometimes it was like, okay, it was one off, but most of the time it popped back up. Nope. Now I remember why. Delete. Because it'll say, you know, you can mute them and still be their friend. It's like, okay, well, I'll just do that. So I've just been muting that. Holy shit. My timeline now, you can see a digital tumbleweed float across. It's like all I get now are advertisements for software and Dungeon Synth albums coming out. Every now and then, like, I'll keep in touch. I was at, like, Angelique with her coffee thing this morning. I was like, hey, yeah, I can relate. But for the most part, social media now is wonderful because there's nothing on it. And that is my advice to everyone. Get the fuck off. Trust me. Which is really funny because you're probably on there now. This is how you found out about this. But seriously, you won't hurt my feelings. Stay
off. Positivity is important.
You will be so much better.
Like, I know all these facts about COVID because they're shoved down my throat at work. Like, I have to know everything about this and the regulations and everything like that because of the nature of my job, and it's very stressful. So I'm doing the same thing as you are, basically. You know, some of the memes and everything, they're funny, but you know what? I don't need it right now. You know, I hope all my friends are safe and healthy, and, you know, I return any well wishes. But other than that, no, cat pictures, podcasts, and
that's it.
Things that make me laugh or smile, you know.
Positivity listed the shining ray of sunshine. And I mean, seriously, and I'm not saying that to be an ass. I mean, I mean that. You need people like her. Listen to the positivity. As some people say, well, just bury your head in your sand, blah blah blah. Well, it's better than burying your head in your ass. So I mean, I choose to be positive about it, because if it happens, the hell you gonna do? Nothing. So we just move on. There's so much noise. Just tune it out. We've been around for thousands of years, almost 7,000 years according to recorded history, probably even longer than that if you look at the unrecorded history. And I mean, we can do this. It ain't the first time pestilence has hit. Won't be the last. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like I said, what are you going to do about it? Sucks that, you know, they shut the gym down. But, you know, or the fact that, thank God that I had a lot of toilet. Thank God that I am OCD and compulsive enough that I buy bulk mm-hmm. and toilet paper. If I ate my little Atkins chocolate snacks 3 times a day, cauliflower and soup, if I ate that 3 times a day, every day for a week, and had to take a dump and just permanently sit on the toilet, I have enough toilet paper to last me until August. So I'm good. Okay. I'm fine.
Kissing
and
that
for those
Costco
of you
card.
Who are like, oh, where does he live? I hearken back to my Second Amendment conversation that we had a few minutes ago. We're good. I like the humongous. Only instead of like spikes and a hockey mask, it shall have like a bathroom and stuff, but still. Like Mad Max, the toilet paper.
I was going to say that there's some positive that has come really out of this. One, it's kind of like a soft open for a lot of our techniques. It's like, are we able to do the social distancing? I mean, we found out like, oh, well, these militias have popped up. We know that how they would react in a situation like that. And we know that, oh, well, maybe some people will be smart enough to stockpile on, you know, toilet paper in the future and essentials and stuff like that. And one of my best things is, and I was so happy to be able to post this, is I actually saw families together, you know, during a work day, and they were walking down, like, because we're allowed to exercise. That was one of the things that we're allowed to do, is that we can go out for exercising. I saw families together on a work day that normally they would not be together. And it's just so amazing to see that they were having a good time. It was like there was nothing wrong with the world. And this was just so weird. And hopefully, but when this is all over, people will continue to say that, you know, that they'll be like, oh, I don't need to play Fortnite right now. I want to go out with my parents because I had a really good time with them. And I got to really know some things about them that I never got to ask them about it. And so, yeah, it's strange that our world has been turned upside down, but there's some really good positive things in there.
Whether you like the lockdown or whether you don't, I mean, of course, whenever you're talking about you're allowed to go out and exercise, it's like, you goddamn right, I'm allowed to do whatever the hell I want to do.
You ain't the boss of me.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, that I will freely admit I do buck authority at any possible moment. I just, you know, that I'm allowed to go jog. All right. But anyway, I do completely agree with you 5,000%, Paul. Now, as to, you know, shutting down an entire economy just so families could spend time together, even though that's kind of what they should have done in the first place. But that's neither here nor there. Still, mm-hmm. I completely agree with you. It's been wonderful. I haven't had a week's vacation ever. And so the fact that with my job, I work for a local municipality. So, and due to my, like, just with my job, I can do inspections and then, you know, monitor like road surveying and road construction and stuff. So I'm pretty much on call whether anything's happening or not. And we've alternated. So I got this week off, and like I'll go into work next week and my partner is going to have the week off. And it's been absolutely wonderful. It's just been so great.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Because like I said, I buy in bulk. So, and I really, other than the fact that I can't go to the gym, haven't had to alter that much of my lifestyle. Avoiding right. people, I just sit around, play games, and make music. It's the same now. It's great.
Yeah, I keep my distance from mom and dad, but otherwise, nothing's changed. You know, I wear a mask because I have to. We don't have Dustin Hoffman. I'm kind of thankful for that.
Yeah.
Speaking of Dustin Hoffman, his character does eventually figure out that Ford had already known about the virus because you actually see Ford kind of doing the right thing. He is distributing the cure to the people. Unfortunately, he doesn't realize that by now the virus has mutated. And now, not only is it airborne, but it's resistant to the cure because apparently this version of it that mutated in the monkey and so forth, okay, it worked on the monkey because it had the original strain, but once it jumped species, I guess it kind of changed things, and that kind of sets things into motion because now that they found out that the cure doesn't work, they have to go and find the original host vector so that they can find an antibody that they can use to create a lot of more of basically the cure that can produce the new cure. So they have to go and search for the monkey they found out through their investigative thing. Do you think that they would have really kept it that much of a secret? Like, you would think that it would be much better to like spread the word at that point and say, and maybe hide the fact that we had a biological weapon that can just say, hey, we figured out that this monkey or this thing. And it actually took Daniels breaking out of quarantine and basically going through this whole process to let people know. And if he had not done that, they would not have found the monkey. And he needed to do that because not only is his ex-wife, but you have Casey, played by Kevin Spacey. They get infected in the attempt to find a cure for it. They get infected. And so the pressure is on Daniels to find this cure. And so he decides that, yeah, he's going to go Maverick again, go rogue. That they, if they would have just talked to people early on and
just tell somebody, you know, talk it out. But I mean, again, we have a movie narrative that we're trying to propel along as well, such as, you know, government conspiracy and a cover up and, you know, them alluding to the fact that it was a biological weapon and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, you have to, with them covering it up, and then, of course, it's going to cause panic because people don't know what's going on, and it's, you know, creating feelings of anger and resentment and stuff. But then with Mumbles, he has to go and he's got to tell somebody something. You got to find this monkey. And I mean, I have no idea how you catch a monkey running loose in a Cedar Creek, California. I have no clue. So, I mean, yeah, with him going out and broadcasting, you know, how to find, I don't even know how the hell they traced it back. That was some damn good detective work for them finding the vector and tracing it back to that monkey. I'll give them that, because there's no way I'd have known. One thing I did think was kind of cool, it's probably about the most tense in the film, was whenever Kevin Spacey's sitting there on the bed dying or whatever, and like she's trying to draw his blood and he jerks and it cuts her finger with the needle point. And there was just for like 2 seconds and everyone stops, and then you can just see in her face she knew. That was like the most tense point in the film for me. That was pretty cool.
That's the most realistic part of the film.
It just, yeah, it was a really cool moment. It was like, oh shit. It's like, even if I'm laughing at the film up to this point, when that happens, that was one of those oh shit moments. Like, ooh.
You also get that zombie bite moment too, because it's like she's like, oh, I'm okay. And then she like walks away, and like Daniel said, she knew. But she was like, no. And she's like pulling off the glove and washing it and then dumping iodine on there. And then you had Daniel's like overreacting, like, you're like, did you do this? Of course she did. She knows that she knows her job.
Yeah. It just, that was a really cool moment.
Yeah. So Angelique, you said that this is very, very realistic. I mean, this is stuff that you have to worry about a lot. How was this scene to you?
I'm just like, yeah, that's how it happens. My mom was a venipuncture nurse, and you know, you never know what's going to happen in a situation with a patient, and all it takes is something as simple as a you know, involuntary motion or a jerk, or you know, being too tired or trying to rush. You know, it just takes one slip. And then it's like, oh, crap.
I think that's, again, just to piggyback on that, is that's the scary thing. That wasn't intentional. There was nobody at fault. It was a completely involuntary spasm. That's the truly frightening thing. If you really think about it, that's the truly frightening thing. The insignificance of causality. The fact that it didn't matter. It just happened. And the ripple effect from that is, you know, she gets infected and God only knows, you know, next thing you know, she's bleeding out her eyeballs and her asshole, and she's done, you know, doomed to a painful death. Why? Because of an involuntary muscle spasm. And it was nobody's fault.
Well, and it could have been maybe avoided if Kevin Spacey would have been a little bit more communicating with the group early on, like, he kind of knew that he was sort of infected, but he didn't tell it. It's like the whole zombie movie type aspect again. It's like,
he hit the hole in his suit.
Yeah. So that was his fault. So yeah, be mindful of that.
Yeah.
There's always going to be people like that, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the only thing that I guess they could have done differently is, you know what? While you're trying to get his fever below brain boiling point, why don't you wait to do a needle stick?
Yeah, good point.
You know, just saying. I'm no epidemiologist. when did we haven't talked about is how adorable baby Cuba Gooding Jr. is.
Yes, he played a character named Salt. He started out as being the guy that, like, in the first or the second investigation, basically, of the small town that sparked the virus. He pukes after seeing the people. He was lucky that it wasn't airborne at that time. Otherwise, he would have been infected as well. And then he kind of changes. Like, he like that experience is like, I'm never going to let that happen again. I'm not going to let fear control me. And even Dustin Hoffman's character was like, you know, I prefer that you have that fear because, you know, if you're not fearful, then you could be dangerous, I guess. But yeah, Salt really turns out to be an asset to the, I mean, he's the guy that helps Daniel steal a helicopter. And they use that helicopter everywhere.
The area that they're in is like 50 miles.
Oh.
So that wasn't really a stretch for the helicopter's fuel tank. But it's like that character was a robot created by the industrial military complex to be the perfect soldier.
Apparently. Yeah, them getting in the helicopter, I mean, that was like late stage Final Fantasy stuff there. I mean, you get the airship, next thing you know, you're crossing over everywhere, doing everything that you've been trying to do for the first hour and a half in this damn slow movie. Anyway, but yeah, they were just all of a sudden, man, they're zipping back and forth. They're getting things done, man.
But that's where the like human error thing works in the reverse. Like at the beginning, all the human errors caused the bad thing, caused the virus to happen. And now you got all these weird things, coincidences that occur, like, oh, the pilot had to be taking a leak, so that was convenient for them to be able to steal the helicopter. Oh, the ship that had the original monkey didn't leave until just that morning so that they were able to find it out in the ocean.
Right.
Because they happened to
and
talk
the lady
to the
working at the the exactly. lady working the shipyard happened to be boning the captain of the boat.
That's just, again, that's the story narrative. That's where that kind of comes into play. That's, you know, have to suspend disbelief.
They go to a radio, or not a radio station, but a television station, and they are able to get the word out, which is, like Daniel said, communication. That's all they needed to do. They found, it just happened to be that the mother was talking to her daughter about this monkey-like creature out in the woods, and they were feeding her apples, and she was able to call in, and they got the monkey, and Salt was able to tranquilize the monkey. They're able to potentially get the anti-serum, but of course, they chased him around because, you know,
because that's what you do over in urban areas. You have a helicopter firefight.
And they were able to get away because Salt fired like two rockets into the ground, and they assumed that the helicopter crashed, even though they knew that that helicopter had rockets on it.
Whole time they're sitting there jerking around with that little thing, and nobody bothered to see the big ass gun turrets on that helicopter. You know, it's like a little bit, you know, they're like, you're going to land your helicopter. No, I'm not. Yeah, you are. We're going to chase you. Blah, blah, blah. And I mean, did nobody stop and be like, you know, at any time he could turn around and blow us out of the sky too, you know, a little mutual respect. No, they just chase him around. It's like, he'll run. He's fine.
You know, my dad, he is really good at suspending disbelief, but his, you know, military experience comes into play a lot when we're watching movies like this. And that was pretty much his point. You know, he just would have turned around, let him up, and then just gone on his business. That's not how this works.
My kind of guy. That's what I'm talking about. Words of wisdom there.
And all during this time, they're going ahead with Operation Clean Sweep, which apparently the president authorized, which is they're going to firebomb the town and city of Cedar Creek, like they did that old original town in Africa. And basically, yeah, it's like, what?
Yeah.
Do you want to be reelected, sir? I mean, really?
that again, that one we talk about, like, completely unrealistic. That right there was just probably the cherry on the big ice cream sundae of unbelievable was that. But, you know, at this point, it's like, all right, let's go.
But at least they had one good politician there that was basically saying, you know, I'm not going to allow this to happen. You know, I even want a guy that is not in favor of any of this in the room here telling me that there's no other option.
God, it was so ham-fisted and hokey. It's like, Gordon Gekko, sit down. We know. For crying out loud. Oh, my God. Put on your sunglasses for all this virtue signaling. Jesus Christ. But, yeah. I was, like, during that whole part, I was just laughing my ass off. It was just goofy and unbelievable.
Look at all these Polaroids of these people.
You're going to burn them in your brain. I want you to remember them. Okay, dude. Who are you trying to convince? I believe you.
And after all of that, he actually had nothing to do afterwards.
It's right. Like
nothing. It actually took Ford to stop the original clean sweep after Daniels goes and tells Billy Ford that, hey, we've got the cure here. We're coming back. And it was like, okay, I'll send the bomber back, which is what he did. But of course.
That was funny. It was like, so I'm led to believe that you've disobeyed a direct order. And of course, they didn't answer because they said, you know, the bomb dropped in the ocean. It's like, well, I need you to bring the plane back and refuel and get another bomb and go back out there and deliver. It's like, okay. That's some swift punishment there.
Sir, yes, sir.
Yeah. Oh, God, my favorite part. I even made a note about this. So Donald Sutherland's in the chopper, and they're chasing the small little helicopter, you know, and the dude's lighting them up, you know, trying to sit there firing his machine guns. He had asked the pilot whenever he first got in, he's like, so you telling me you're the best pilot in this man's army? And the guy's like, yes, sir. And so they're chasing him for 5 minutes. He's unloading everything he's got at that helicopter. And all you hear Donald Sutherland goes, you're missing him, son. You're missing him, son. You missed him, son. You missed it. And I'm sitting there, he's like, God damn it, I know. Shut up. I know I missed him.
I thought it was the best pilot, not the best shot.
He's just sitting here side driving. Up. You're missing him, son. I know, Dad. God, that was so funny.
I'm just like, so much of that just would not stand. I mean, this isn't Independence Day.
Yeah, for real. I mean, we just, at this point, I wasn't complaining. You got to add something.
Yeah, I mean,
for crying out loud, you got to add something.
Some action.
I'm for real.
So, at the very end, like when Ford actually grows a pair, and arrests McClintock. What was the grounds in which he didn't actually? He just basically told the guy, "Go arrest him." And that guy was very happy to do because he was like, you know, he was this colonel that was constantly being belittled by Donald Sutherland throughout the entire movie. It's like, okay, yeah, I'm gonna puts up a gun and it's like.
And he just arrests him, yeah.
He just arrests him. Like, what was the grounds? It was like, well, maybe that goes back to that one senator. It was like, you know, I'm only going to allow this. And then because he broke that order, maybe that's why he was able to arrest him. But, Jesus.
That can happen. His commands were basically becoming more and more ridiculous and unsound, so...
Everything was all kind of based on, because we know that he wasn't infected, but what if Daniels was actually infected? What if it mutated and he was infected somehow, and now he just gave it to all, you know, the Palisades all over the California shoreline?
There you go. I mean, crop dusting everybody with disease.
I mean, at that point, just treat everybody as they're infected, but, you know.
there's part of me that thinks that he will be okay.
I just like the you know, the flunky, you know, because he's, like you said, he's been just getting it both ways the whole movie from both Morgan Freeman and General Stick-em-up.
General Stick-em-up.
Sorry.
But, I love it.
Yeah, just, you know, he's just like, you know, that guy's had a long military career. He's respected. But then all of a sudden, he's just like crap on the bottom of their boot. I felt really vindicated when he just kind of grinned and like, hee, 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 now who's got the shoe? It
would have been even better if you'd have done that. Well, this must be the proudest moment of your career.
Sir. Let's go to the brig, sir.
As he walked by, I'd sneeze on him too, like Ace Ventura. Oh, <sir! laughs>
But you know, where are you going to put him? What, you got a bunch of tents? Yeah, just, oh, what, are you just going to sit in a chair across?
Sit here and mind your manners.
Well, they commandeered the town, so they probably lock him up in like the sheriff's office or something.
I put him in the backseat of some Humvee.
But like this, it has to end on a happy note. They find the monkey, they make the serum, and they miraculously be able to make beaters and leaders of this stuff.
And then the most unbelievable thing out of the entire film. Him.
That's not how this works.
Him standing at her bed talking about it, and they're going to like patch things up.
Yep.
GTFO. I don't think so. These people were nasty to each other in the moments that I was actually tuning into this snooze fest. In the first 45 minutes, these people hated each other. Now all of a sudden they're going to patch it back up. Ain't no way in hell.
She even took the dogs.
I'm for real. Ain't no coming back from that. Lines were drawn.
Well, I could see that she wouldn't reconcile with him. He always wanted to, but it's like, yeah.
It's amazing what contracting a disease and realizing that the only person that can cure you is your ex-husband. It's amazing what that'll do for your opinion. You know what I mean?
I don't know. Looking back on my last few exes, I'd be like, no, I'm good with God. I'm good
Give
with
my
death.
Dogs back.
I want to think, well, two things. The dog thing, I think, is she did the right thing, because it, obviously if he's unable to, like, the right thing and put them in a kennel when he's away, that he had to go and like, here are the kids.
Yeah, you're darn right he did. You don't board your animals up. You take them even if it's your nemesis. They're dogs. I mean, if I were to take, like, Darth Vader, the dogs, he'd take care of the dogs. I mean, that's that's just what you do for... Like, seriously, that's like these unspoken code of humanity. You know, it's like the three rules that tell, you know, my son and, you know, guy friends. It's like the three rules of being a guy, handling another guy friend. You never mess with his money, his woman, or his alcohol, in that order. And, you know, the fourth one you could say would be dog. Just... You know, leave the dogs alone. They're like the Geneva Convention of existence. You leave the dogs alone.
In her way of thinking, though, that was it was irresponsible that he, you know, because he couldn't. He was the reason why she was late to her own first day at the job, or like made her first day so miserable.
Well, I mean, I get a
feeling.
That's
on her.
Yeah.
That's on her, though. I'm sorry. When your ex-husband is like the top virologist and blah, 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 and is being sent to Africa to chart some new unknown disease, you know he ain't going to be back by Thursday.
I get a feeling that she would have blamed him for the viral outbreak at the beginning of the film if she could have gotten away with it. Now, fortunately, her opinion has changed by the end of the film, but still.
Yeah. No, but still, you knew, you're manufacturing a problem, and that's just dumb.
I think she actually did have a change of heart. It was because of that whole death scene with Casey, played by Kevin Spacey.
Probably.
is because he was basically telling her, he's kind of the keep it between the two of them. He's like trying to get them back together and reconcile. And seeing him die and his last kind of like wishes word that they kind of see what was really going on, that kind of told her, one, that he should at least give him another chance, and two, probably should have, or that life is too short, things like this could happen. And so look back at your own feelings, and I don't think she really, really hated him, even though she shows that throughout the entire film. There was like very, very little of her not showing that kind of effort toward him.
I don't know, I'd have just given up. You see Patrick Dempsey die, and it's like the world has just gotten a lot darker. I'm glad they were able to keep it together, you know what I mean?
I guess, but not wanting to die alone is pretty powerful.
That's amazing what that'll do for your outlook, isn't it?
Yeah, they needed a pretty little bow to put on it. I mean,
seriously.
Being able to manufacture an anti-serum in 25 minutes wasn't unrealistic enough. You had to, you know, get Indy and Marion back together.
Yeah, for real. I like that.
So let's go into our discussion game for this episode. And what basically, since we look at films like Little Old Ladies in a book club, we like to use what's called a discussion game to further explore the story in ways that are different than just analyzing bit by bit by bit. And tonight's discussion game is one that's called Extend the End, where we look at the film, and then what we do is we write our own little cutscene to the film, something that would be tacked on to the end of the film. We could talk about the relationship that kind of got reconciled at the end, and maybe we can have some kind of a scene that describes that, or maybe we can talk about McClintock's character, and we can talk about that. So, Angelique, how would you extend the end of this film?
Well, if I had to make this movie any longer, let's see. So, Daniels is given an honorable discharge. The only reason he escapes the dishonorable is because he, you know, found the monkey and saved the little town or whatever. And he goes to work at the CDC. He and Rene Russo are back together. And Cuba Gooding Jr. becomes the Surgeon General.
Ooh, I like that. For me, my extend the scene would be the typical Indiana Jones type of ending where you see basically them taking a crate, which you can obviously make it look like the crates that they were using earlier in the film, and then have this guy basically wheel the crate, and then you'll have the word like Cedar Creek on there, where essentially what they've done is made the virus. The new biological weapon is this new virus.
Like and then it.
Basically that's how I would end the film. How about you, Daniel?
Okay. The virus has mutated again at the end. We close out, we start to get a nice little fade, and we zoom down to the chick's finger, the cut on it. The virus is mutated again. And then we go to the government lab, like, you know, some lab at some undisclosed location. We don't know the time jump or whatever. And we find out that this disease was part of a preliminary test for a communicable disease biological weapon that can target specific ethnic genomes and specific genome types, sort of like siphon filter, that you could target it straight down to a particular person if you wanted to get a Norwegian who was born in South Carolina, that specific. And this virus has now become that. So what we have seen is actually the prequel to what has become an international thriller
And Cuba Gooding Jr. is in charge of the team, the task force, that has to go in and make sure that they get this virus. And he's like lost his eye, so he has to wear an eye patch, and he had to get like his left hand amputated because he contracted the disease too. So he's like, he's pretty sore about that. And Daniels, and he's dead. He was tortured by the government agents. So Cuba Gooding Jr. is now in charge of the task force to go and get this virus. Now what this virus is they're planning on spreading it through nanomachines. And so they've taken the virus and put the nanomachines. We'll see, that's going to mutate, because we get this final little flash that this monkey that had the disease was one, are y'all ready for this? He was one
of 12.
And then we zoom out.
Oh no.
And you see Bruce Willis walking the wasteland. Mic drop. And I'm out.
That's beautiful.
I have so taken good. Outbreak and combined it with Metal Gear, the A-Team, Siphon Filter, and 12 Monkeys. Need I say more?
Oh, nice.
That's, see, that's why we have think of it. I couldn't think of anything. Like, I don't, couldn't think of anything serious. I don't know. It's boring. This movie was boring. And I'm just trying to think of something.
That leads us in. Our final thoughts of the film and our final rating. Angelique, would you like to do the honors and describe to the audience how we rate films at Film Jerks?
Sure. So our rating system is pretty simple. You like it. That means you're willing to spread this movie around like the deadly Motaba virus itself. Smear it all over everybody. Get real unsanitary with it. I'm lonely. I'm sorry. you lump it, which means no, you're gonna obey the military, stay indoors, not tell a soul about it, keep it a secret as a military weapon. Or we've got maybe, which means you're not feeling great. You're running a low grade temp. Yeah, you'll go to the movies. So, gentlemen, how do you rate Outbreak?
Yeah, Paul.
Okay. I will lump this film because even though it was a commercial success when it first came out, I think it has very much dated itself. Like I said earlier on, it's like a Andromeda Strain light. It just wasn't, it didn't have the full impact of that story. And I guess once you've gotten Andromeda Strain, any story like that just doesn't compare. And
especially now that we have this going on in real life, that really dates the movie. Like, sure, it might have been a commercial success. Dear God, I don't know how. But in the 90s, but I mean, Jesus Christ, that might as well have been 200 years ago, let alone, holy crap, 20 years ago? Was it 20? No, 30 years ago? Damn. Well,
it was like number one for 3 weeks, and then Tommy Boy came out, and then Tommy Boy was the one that actually knocked it out of first place.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So you could tell people wanted to have something a little bit more lighthearted.
Yeah, for real.
I guess that actually sums up what this movie was like to me. Like, except for that weird tacked-on reconciliation thing, it wasn't really that much of a happy ending. There were too many coincidences. Like, it all started out with coincidences that led to the virus spreading, and then all these coincidences that led to the virus being able to be taken out. It just, it was, like I said, Andromeda Strain light. Michael Crichton just does it so much better.
Yep. So, Daniel, you agree? Lump it.
That's your, I mean, that should be the motto for this entire thing. Michael Crichton just does it better. I mean, to take your pick your topic, and Michael Crichton could do it better. It just, I mean,
I'm not going outright, oh my God, this movie was so boring, but it was, watch it with friends. So there's my kind of maybe, you know, I got to give that. If I would, now if you have a podcast where you can, you know, shit on it afterwards, go right ahead. But like, if you're just going to sit there and watch it on your own, no, you can find something else to watch. There's a lot more. No, but with somebody to talk about it, because in, especially nowadays, ultimately you're going to end up talking about the current situation, and that might be good. Healthy discourse is good to that. You know, it's, if anything is good, to just talk about it, get your feelings out and rationalize it. Because once you rationalize a situation, then you can continue living and progress further. So yeah, watch the film. Hopefully you'll get some sort of edification if you're watching it with somebody. If you're by yourself, hell no. Watch Wreck, watch 28 Days Later, watch Tommy Boy. There is no need to watch this if you're by yourself.
Agreed completely. That's my thing. You know, I'm going to lump it because, like Paul said, it's aged terribly. I think the reason for its number one status is simply the star power behind this film.
Good God, you know it.
You know, Russo, you've got Spacey, Cuba Gooding Jr. was coming up at that time, you know, and of course, Dustin Hoffman. Who's not going to go watch a Dustin Hoffman movie? And Donald Sutherland, always a mainstay, and Morgan Freeman. I mean, just the names keep piling up. But I kind of, like we discussed, you know, I've just been avoiding, you know, stuff that'll make me think about, worry about, you know, get any strange ideas about the whole situation going on. And I haven't watched any Outbreak movies or anything like that until this one. And I'm just like, yeah, that's not how it works, guys. But it just, like Daniel said, it was boring. And to me, there can be nothing worse than a boring movie.
It's a waste of my time.
My time is precious, and I'll never spend it on that movie again.
Here. I completely agree. I've gotten a good laugh. I've enjoyed my time shitting on this thing, but I will never willingly sit down and watch that movie by myself alone. No, that'll never happen.
Our conversation is the best thing about this movie. And like you said, you know, it's really healthy because it does link into what's going on, and it's good to talk about it, you know. But other than that, nah.
You want a really cool, like, what Outbreak should have been? Go play Siphon Filter. Blow the dust off that PlayStation. Now, it's like washing your eyeballs with sandpaper because graphically, man. But the premise of Siphon Filter is just that, is a genetic virus that has been manufactured that can target a specific genome. And this one dude, part of the biowarfare division, Gabe Logan, like, he's sort of like Dustin Hoffman, only cool. He was like, it's a Dustin Hoffman, Cuba Gooding Jr. love child is what he would be from Outbreak. And that's him. And just play the game because it's really cool. Because it's a political international thriller, but it's going after a disease to prevent an outbreak like that.
Can I still imagine Dustin Hoffman as being Gabe?
Hey, man, whatever floats your boat, I think is Patrick Dempsey. So, I mean, you just, you know, different strokes, different folks. But you can also use your taser on people. You like throw the little whip out and it'll tase them. And then after they're like, ugh, and they fall over, keep holding down the button and eventually they'll catch on fire. It's so funny.
Well, my favorite viral game is Parasite Eve.
Yes. Oh, yes. I love that freaking opening movie.
Yeah.
That was one of the biggest inspirations for my In Musica album, was that opening sequence for Parasite Eve.
Nice.
Oh, and then there's Metal Gear 5. There's a scene in Metal Gear 5 that deals with the virus. And it's a pretty wicked scene where you're going through your base, having to clear it out. It's pretty cool.
People couldn't speak or anything because that would affect them or something like that.
Yeah, nanomachines.
Nanomachines.
That was the answer for everything in Metal Gear eventually.
Shoot, yeah. You know, go ahead, you can play a game, Pandemic.
Oh, I've never... Oh, the board game?
Yeah. I think it's on Steam also or whatever. I've never played it, but I do remember it is there.
I've got the board game, Pandemic. In fact, I'm looking at it right now. Where can we find you guys out on the internet as well? How about you, Daniel?
God, I'm all over the place. I mean, you can find me if you in the Film Jerks group and you tag me in a post, I might be seeing it if I'm checking for my band. Otherwise, you can just find me at, hell, I don't know, saragost.bandcamp.com. If you're a Lord of the Rings fan, you'll know how to spell it. Otherwise, just let your fingers do the walking.
How about you, Anjali?
You can find me on Facebook. That's pretty much where I live, you know, since all my friends are remote and we're quarantined. You know?
Exactly.
Right, you can also find me on Astro Radio Z. I have a segment called The Tub of Terror, where I read a crappy horror novel while luxuriating in a bubble bath, and I tear it apart.
And as for me, you can find me by looking up the Bowtie Critic, and you can see some of the things that I've discussed other outside of Film Jerks, as well as just whatever things that I'm interested in. So,
I forgot, because yeah, Angelique's right. I forgot. I do the bottom rack, but that's fine. If you're on Astro Radio Z to listen to The Tub of Terror, which you should be, and if you don't, you'll be hurting my feelings. You wouldn't want to hurt my feelings, would you? Be sure to listen to Tub of Terror. But I do have the bottom rack on there where I just pick a movie off the bottom rack. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I find a digital bottom rack and I'll watch a movie, or sometimes I just watch a movie because it's cool as hell. Go with that. But coming up, since the Dungeon Siege is over and my concert at the Masquerade has been finished, it's complete, won't be too much longer, I feel the call for a Mockbuster Summer. So just stay tuned. It's coming up on us before too long, so be sure to follow the various groups or whatever, and you'll find out. You know, we know we've been planning this for a while. It's just with other things happening, haven't been able to really focus too much on it, but don't worry, it's coming. Just thought I might tease that just a little bit. So anyway, now I'm done.
Fantastic. I'm looking forward to that. Mockbuster Summer was an amazing thing last year. And,
it was so much fun.
Yeah, it was fun as hell.
And now with this new streaming platform, Caracal is basically Rabbit.
Oh, it works, really?
Yes, it works so much better than Cast. Caracal, I think.
Yeah, I saw it posted in the Astro Radio Z group. I haven't looked on it or anything, so it actually works.
Yes, it's great. And if I can get internet halfway decent, streaming parties will be a new reality.
God, tell me about it.
That in these times, I think.
Man, so that might really change the dynamic of the Mockbuster Summer. Yeah. We'll have to do a little bit more research on that one.
Do it live.
That's what I'm thinking. That might really change the dynamic for the better or worse. I have to actually open it up with a disclaimer on that one. Because I am
these
the
opinions.
Friend. Yeah, I am the friend that you have to warn your other friends about. There is very little that I hold sacred, and it just, I'll say it before I even think about it.
You're in good company. So.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's it for this episode. Just remember that here at Film Jerks, we're not always jerks to the movies that we discuss, but when it comes to films, we don't jerk around. So let's end it by just going mumble, 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 and so forth. All right, ready?
God, I miss this show.